WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A Harrisonburg high school student has been arrested after Harrisonburg police said he made threats of gun violence on Snapchat. The organization that manages UVA's $14 billion endowment says it will not divest from Israel despite student protests. And we meet the local pool player who recently competed in the U.S. Open Pool Championship in Atlantic City. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, September 17th. Harrisonburg high school student was arrested Monday evening after Harrisonburg police said he made threats of gun violence on Snapchat. WHSV reports the threats were made on Sunday targeting HHS and made similar threats on Monday toward Wilson Memorial High School in Augusta County. Both Harrisonburg and Rocktown high schools were closed Monday as school administrators and Harrisonburg police investigated the threats. The suspect is a 16-year-old male not identified publicly. He is charged with two counts of making threats of death or bodily injury. Police say he was taken to a juvenile detention center. Harrisonburg police say they received a citizen complaint on Sunday about a social media post threatening to, quote, shoot up HHS with a detailed description of how he would do it. In a letter sent to Harrisonburg City Public Schools, staff, and families Monday morning, Superintendent Michael Richards said the threat was most likely not credible, but that the school takes no chances. The two city high schools will reopen on schedule today. The organization that manages the University of Virginia's $14 billion endowment said late last week it would not divest from Israel. The Daily Progress reports that the University of Virginia Investment Management Company's chief operating officer said the group's job was to, quote, generate strong adjusted returns. During last school year, more than 5,000 students, about a quarter of the student population, voted for UVA to disclose its investments and sever financial ties with Israel. Meanwhile, UVA has brought an end to the disciplinary proceedings against the last of the 11 students arrested in May during a pro-Palestine protest. The Daily Progress reports that five of the arrested students met via Zoom with two employees of UVA's Division of Student Affairs. Students read a statement, and their advisors raised concerns about how the university has treated those arrested. The meeting served as an informal resolution to complaints levied against the students for violating UVA's standards of conduct. Although the students were criminally charged with trespassing, the charges were later dismissed by the Albemarle County General District Court. Virginia Commonwealth University has suspended the Kappa Sigma fraternity for 4 years. The Richmond Times-Dispatch reports the school began an investigation following a report. The suspension was implemented in May, but previously unreported. Kappa Sigma pledges were required to do errands for older fraternity members, and in some cases, pledges were made to consume spicy foods and milk. In June, VCU held a statewide hazing prevention summit. The event was co-organized by the family of Adam Oakes, who died of alcohol poisoning after being hazed during a fraternity event. The city of Harrisonburg is applying for between $70 and $90 million in federal funding to study more than a dozen railroad crossings. The Daily News Record reports that if it receives the funding, the Public Works Department could eventually reroute the line running through the city. James Madison University and Rockingham County are assisting with the application. If Harrisonburg is awarded the grant, the study could begin next year. A local pool player recently competed in the U.S. Open Pool Championship in Atlantic City. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
It's nine-ball tournament night at Gold Crown Billiards in Harrisonburg. The bright blue tables glow under hanging lights. Reggie Jackson from Stanton faces his first opponent, Jimmy Childs, who drove up from Botetourt County to play. Neither of them are used to having a reporter watch the game.
Started off, had ball in the hand. I'm running out the rack. I got some awkward position on the five ball in the corner pocket. Long story short, I didn't run a rack.
That's shooting all the balls, 1 through 9, without letting your opponent touch the table. Jackson does it on game 3 of the night. Jackson fell in love with pool when he was 17, after moving to Stanton from New Jersey. He graduated high school in 1993 and went to Rutgers University, where he continued honing his skills.
I had a pool hall in Linden, New Jersey. I used to go to and play it every day.
Honestly, I feel like pool actually saved my life to a point. And I'm explaining why, because, you know, when I was younger,
I was around a whole lot of people that drank. When I played pool, it was about pool. It was not about drinking. So it kept me from wanting to, you know, drink and do all the other stuff people were doing.
Jackson moved back to Stanton and kept watching pool and challenging his friends and mentors. His game, Nine Ball, is a version of pool where players have to sink balls 1 through 9 in numerical order. If you miss a shot, the other person goes. Fouls, such as not hitting the correct ball at all, let your opponent place the cue ball wherever they want. Jackson gives a rundown of the rules on his YouTube channel at K9 The Pool Player. I asked what his signature playing style is.
I'm not gonna lie to you, man. I have this little punchy stroke. This little punchy stroke that I've had forever because I've never been trained. No one ever really trained me to play pool. All right? I learned on my own. I love the game.
For years, he just played cash games in the area. Eventually, he started traveling across the state or to Maryland for a tournament. He and his wife, Crystal, work at the Target Distribution Center in Stewart's Draft, so they had to squeeze the trips into their schedule. Then, earlier this year, Jackson signed up for a tournament in Herndon that could qualify him for the U.S. Open. The players' rankings are like batting averages, so many hundred out of 1,000.
I battled, and when I say I battled, the guy I beat to get into the Open was like a 689, and I'm a 657, so technically on paper, you know, he's supposed to beat me. Yeah, so it was a war.
On August 20th in Atlantic City, Jackson made his championship debut, playing against Canadian Alex Pagalian, who's been competing in the U.S. Open since 2002 and won it in 05. Whoever won 9 rounds first would advance.
I'm playing Alex Pagalian with 1 practice rack, so I am uncomfortable. You know, I'm nervous. But once I loosened up, you know, and got going, yeah, I mean, I opened up and started playing a little pool.
Pagalian started out 3-0. Jackson took the 4th, sinking balls 3 through 9 in 1 run, and then the 5th game. They battled back and forth. Jackson ran out the rack, making it 5-7. But in the end, Pagalian won 9-6.
When I got done, when the match was over with, because I almost beat him, you know, I had people coming up to me, literally. I had one guy come up and get me a signed shirt. He'd never seen a black guy come to the U.S. Open and do what I did at the U.S. Open. And they were excited. I had a guy come up, and I don't know his name again, but it was a cop from New York. And he told me, he said, listen, man, I just wanted to let you know you really inspired us. He said, thank you so much because we know you're a working man like the rest of us, you know.
That stuck with Jackson's friend, too. Chris Mealy is the owner of Gold Crown Billiards. The two have played pool together for more than 20 years.
For somebody like us, local guy, 50 years old, that works and has kids and stuff like that, to be able to qualify and compete against people that do it every day for a living, that's a pretty big accomplishment. He's playing really good right now, much better than he ever has in his life, I would say.
My thing is just try to play my best. Don't beat myself up. And I try not to beat myself up because, you know, you're going to miss shots. You're going to make mistakes. Just don't beat yourself up.
Jackson has a whole family crew cheering him on to go back to the U.S. Open next year. He said God has helped him throughout his life, and raising his son Caleb, a.k.a. K-Pup, has been the best part of it. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
To see photos from the tournament in Harrisonburg and a link to watch Jackson's U.S. Open match, visit WMRA.org or the app. A case involving the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative was debated in court Monday. Virginia's Air Pollution Control Board voted to pull out of the program last June. The plaintiffs argued the move inflicted economic harm to conservation groups that help low-income residents weatherize their homes. Virginia Public Radio's Roxy Todd reports.
Virginia joined the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative in 2020, the first southern state to do so. The program is meant to incentivize electric companies to use renewable energy, but opponents, including Governor Glenn Youngkin, argue it puts the cost burden on ratepayers. 11 other states are part of the program, which is commonly referred to as RGGI.
The RGGI regulation doesn't ban fossil fuels, but it says if you burn fossil fuels and you generate carbon dioxide, you now have to have an allowance for every ton of carbon dioxide.
Nate Benferrado is an attorney at the Southern Environmental Law Center, which is representing the Association of Energy Conservation Professionals. The association claims that when Virginia left RGGI, it did so illegally, and their group lost out on funding to pay for weatherization.
And their mission is to help low-income households reduce their energy bills, reduce their energy burdens.
The group wants the court to rule the state's decision to leave RGGI null and void, which would essentially bring Virginia back into the program. A lawyer with the Attorney General's office argued that the plaintiff's claims are unfounded. A circuit court judge did not rule in the case immediately, but said he hopes to make a decision within 30 days. In Christiansburg, I'm Roxy Todd.
Virginia has been using a funding formula for its public schools first adopted back in the 70s. Now, a bipartisan group of legislators is looking to update that formula. Also with Virginia Public Radio, Brad Kuttner reports.
Virginia's constitution says the state must fund public schools through the standards of quality. That's essentially a formula that counts staff needed for each school division, then applying cost assumptions to estimate each division's needs, cross-check with the locality's fiscal capacity to afford their share versus the state. Yes, it's very complicated. According to a 2023 JLARC report, the current model has left school districts underfunded. Here's Mark Gribben, an analyst with JLARC, describing one of the existing issues during Monday's meeting.
School divisions employ 51% more people than the formula thinks are needed.
Part of the meeting examined how other states fund K-12. A student-based funding formula is the most common. A funding goal is set for each child, and different inputs modify that amount to determine how much the state or locality has to pay. But looking at other states also showed funding formula changes don't happen quickly. Rhode Island, for example, took about a decade. In the short term, committee chair and Hampton Senator Mamie Locke said she'd look to roll back some 2008 recession-era changes, which put caps on how much support staff a school district could hire.
We're not in a recession. Why can't we go ahead and remove that cap?
Both Democrats and Republicans appear open to changes as long as it doesn't harm their districts. Botetourt delegate Terry Austin, a Republican, was among those hopefuls.
We've got to protect the vulnerable school systems who are challenged today, as also the school systems who are in the more affluent areas of the Commonwealth.
Locke also promised statewide public comment sessions once the formula debate heats up, so keep an eye out for those in the coming months or years. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Earlier this year, lawmakers considered legislation to legalize devices that look like slot machines at truck stops and convenience stores. They ended up rejecting those bills, but now they're popping up anyway, and Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
One of the most hotly debated topics in the General Assembly this year was an effort to legalize devices sometimes known as skill games. Supporters call them that because they say winning at them requires some level of skill as opposed to dumb luck. Opponents used to call them gray machines because they existed in a gray area of the law until a court eventually found them to be illegal. Now, several machines are back up and running in Henrico. Delegate Rodney Willett of Henrico says Virginia is returning to a gray area.
I think we need to regulate them and have a clear set of rules and a clear set of taxes, because if we're going to have these machines, we should be making revenue from them. If we're not going to have them, then let's make that clear. But I do think that the gray areas with the gray machine are unfortunately still there.
The new machines operate without the player inserting money because a cashier or bartender acts as a middleman. Delegate Paul Krizik of Fairfax County says the company that operates these things, known as Pesomatic, is trying to exploit a loophole.
It really makes you question whether you would ever consider legalizing skill games, because it just rewards this kind of bad actor companies like Pesomatic that are deliberately looking for a legal loophole.
A spokesman for Attorney General Jason Meares says the office is looking at whether this company is in compliance with the law. I'm Michael Pope.
Finally today, U.S. Representative Jennifer McClellan says she's furious about the listeria outbreak linked to the Boar's Head meatpacking plant in eastern Virginia. Dozens of people have been hospitalized and 9 have died during the outbreak around the country, including a man from Newport News. McClellan spoke out at a Harris Walz campaign rally last week.
First of all, the whole situation is just outrageous. And the fact that rather than doing what they need to do to address the violations and provide a healthy environment for their product and their workers, that they're just closing down, makes me wonder if they ever had a commitment to public safety in the first place.
Democrat said she and other officials were preparing a list of questions for the company. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.